Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, JC Chandor joins us for Kraven the Hunter, and we do a State of the Oscars race.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 332 of RoBlend, a podcast that had a great joke earlier in the day and now can't remember it. It's awful, guys, being old. literally, it's like things just come and go. So I'll get you guys with a better one next week, I promise. I'm Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend. I am the co-host of the RoBlend podcast, joined each and every week by Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago, Gabe Kovach in the producer's chair, and a shout out to our boy Kevin McCarthy, who's currently sitting in Beltway traffic in Washington, D.C. Poor guy.
You've sat in that traffic a time or two.
I told Michelle what had happened to Kevin right before we started recording it, and she said, I am so glad that we do not live in Washington, D.C. And that's where all her family is, too. I always feel bad that I maybe, like, you know, keep Michelle from going back there. But no, she would not be happy to be living there. It is awfully tough. On this week's show, first off, thank you guys for joining us. Really appreciate you guys being here. We have JC Chandor, who's going to be joining the show to talk about his new film, Kraven the Hunter. And then we're going to do a state of the Oscar race in the wake of such things as the Golden Globe nominations, the New York Film Critics Circle, the LA Film Critics, and just kind of the state of the race of where we're at. First off, how are you boys doing? Everyone doing okay?
We're here, good. Baby.
Yeah, doing good. This is our last
great
crunch of kind of junket interviews, trying to pack in a lot of movies as much as we can. My last big one. So yours was Baby Girl, and you just got it out of the way this weekend, right?
Oh, movies to watch?
Movies to watch. Yeah.
Baby Girl, and now we're having a couple of series thrown our way. I just had the new season of Severance added to my screener accounts. Yeah, nice. I don't think I have, even though I should because I have the junket on Friday, the new season of Squid Game should be added to my account pretty soon. So now I feel like I'm transitioning over from film to television.
Maybe you have to go through like an obstacle course in order to get access.
I'm just lying dead on the ground. I was like, all I wanted was the junket.
I just wanted to see the first couple episodes.
I know it's not the time to do recommendations because this is early, but I cannot recommend enough A Man on the Inside on Netflix with Ted Danson.
Oh, Ted Danson, yeah.
It is so wonderful. It's just so well written. It's incredibly smart. And he is the consummate pro at sitcoms. Yeah. He just knows exactly what to deliver. Yeah. It's really great. I think it's 8 episodes. It's terrific. Michelle and I ripped through them at a time that we're supposed to be watching movies. So my last one is still The Brutalist. And the problem with The Brutalist is that I just need to carve out 3.5 hours. I don't want to do it in chunks.
Sure.
I'm desperate not to do it in chunks.
Oh, yeah. It moves so fast that, like, I don't know how you would tear yourself away from it.
All right. Let me ask this of each of you guys. Do you think I could do half and half, like over 2 nights? Would that disrupt it?
I mean, it ends on a very, like, or the first half ends on a very, like, what's going to happen next? So it would be
the only way, I would say.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. If you have to break it up into part one and part two, because it ends in a very purposeful moment.
Jake, you and I said, because this is really inside baseball, that this award screener might not have the intermission. Did you ever go ahead and look?
I didn't, but I will. I will look tonight and check it out. All I know is that someone said the runtime on the screener is 15 minutes shorter than the runtime. But I don't understand that because, Gabe, you saw it. The what the photo that is used, without giving anything away, for the intermission slate is it's embedded into the film. It's a part of it.
And but it could be the sort of thing where it's like a chapter break and maybe they just show the photo and then they go into the next. Because it has kind of, if I remember correctly, because now I've also Queer had chapter breaks and I don't know if I'm conflating how they did it. But it was like a full, each chapter was like a new title card type thing in The Brutalist, right? So maybe they just kind of add another one for the home video slash
I'll look tonight. I'll pop on there and see if I can. If you could,
let me know, because maybe Michelle and I will start it tonight after we record this. But anyway, we got a lot to get to this week. So if you're watching us on YouTube, hello. Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate you taking in the visual element of the show. If you're there, please hit subscribe, turn on notifications. We appreciate all you guys who came and checked out the John M. Chu interview that we had. And hopefully you are sticking around and watching more episodes of Roblox. Still reading a lot of comments from people who we'll land on an episode and say found the channel after a long period of time. And now we're ripping through old episodes, which is really, really cool. Got a great message from a fan of the show who's been listening for a long time, who says that every December they go back and re-listen to our best of shows and listen to our lists.
Oh, that's fun.
As a way to sort of just retroactively like think about the year in general and how and what we thought of it, which is really funny because you had a funny comment today in the text thread of you're going to hate your list a year from now as we wrestle over what's going to be on our top 10. So
because we often talk about this, you end up with about 13 or 14 movies that you want to put on your top 10 list, and usually it's about six movies that you really want to squeeze into the last two slots. And it doesn't, I don't know about you, there's no combination of those last few slots that's making me happy. Because it's like, okay, well, I'm happy I get to fit these in there, but I'm bummed that I, and that there is that thought process of, am I going to hate myself in a year when we go back and look at these? And I'm going to say, oh, I can't believe I didn't put movie X, Y, and Z in there.
Sure. Yeah. I just want to be happy with the 10 I pick. And what I will say is I've got 10 right now, and I have about four or five that are on the outside looking in. So you guys will have a timestamp on this if you're listening to it right now. I haven't seen The Brutalist. I'm thinking The Brutalist has the potential to bump something out. But even if it doesn't, even if it works fine for me but isn't really overwhelming, I'm very happy with the 10 I have. So if I had to roll with my list as is, I'm very content with it. I love all the movies that are on there. I'd be sad for the movies that don't make it, but that's where I'm at right now.
I'll be curious. If you end up breaking that up, I'd be curious your perspective, like if you get to that breaking point and if it leaves you wanting, you're like, nah, I want to keep going, or if feel like you're able to pull yourself away from it.
I don't know about you, Gabe. Whenever I hit I don't know if it's halfway, but whenever I hit the intermission, I was very much like, let's roll, like let's keep this baby going.
It was a welcome break just because it is long, it was like it was fun because we got to talk about it like at our seats a little bit, because at the first half or whatever it is has a lot going on.
And whenever I talk about like the image, there's a specific image that they use with a countdown over it. The image that you're looking at
is Art the Clown.
Crucial. Yeah. It is Art the Clown. Exactly. Yeah. Right. It is actually it's crucial to the plot. It is. It's not just like a slate. It's like an actual plot point. What? The photo that you're looking at.
I'm fascinated. I've got
to
dive in.
I can't wait for you to see it. I don't want to set going in with high expectations is never good for a movie, but. Yeah. Because it's the last on your list, I think you said one of the last that you got to see. I'm really curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, I can't think of anyone who's come out of it being like, meh, it's fine.
I think you'd be hard pressed for the performances alone. I think you'd be hard pressed. Yeah,
sure. All right. Well, in the meantime, if you'd like to sign up for Real Blend Premium, we appreciate the support that you guys give to the show. You get an ad-free version of the show. You get a newsletter from me every other week. This is a newsletter week. So this is a jump on board right now. You'll get a newsletter from me. I have no idea what I'm writing about just yet, but it's early in the week and there's plenty more to come. So in addition to all that cool stuff that's coming, we have an interview. And this week's interview is with J.C. Chandor. Now, I've really enjoyed J.C. Chandor's films up to this point, and I'm really excited to see what he does with Kraven. I will let you guys know that heading into this junket, we got a chance to interview Aaron Taylor-Johnson, and then J.C. came on the show. And you'll hear this as part of the conversation. They only showed us six full scenes from Kraven the Hunter. It ended up being about 20 to 25 minutes worth of footage. And so we were able to talk to him about that. And he's very open about the fact that he was just working on the visual effects until the very last minute, trying to make them as perfect as they can. I can tell you guys that I liked what I saw, but it's really hard to judge a film based on 20 minutes of disconnected footage.
It's
not even the first 20 minutes of the movie. It's literally like, here's the opening, and then it skips forward ahead, and then skips forward.
I kind of respect that, though, if that's, you know, the case, because think about, I mean, that's such an easy headline that you're going to see everywhere if people see it and they're like, the visual effects didn't look good. And it's like, you can't really put that back in the bag and be like, no, like, it's not done. Like, I'm still, you know, like, that's just the word on the street, you know.
Have you listened to this yet, Gabe?
No. I'll listen when I cut it. Yeah.
You guys will hear this soon. Jake, I thought his passion for the project shines through. Like,
he
seems really into it.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, we're about to toss to a 40-minute interview that was scheduled to be 20 minutes.
Correct.
Or something like that. Like,
yeah, we just kept going.
And it came from him just wanting to keep talking about it. And honestly, and I'm not blowing smoke for you guys, his knowledge of Cinema Blend and Cinema Blend's audience, and he referenced multiple times, your audience is going to know this, your audience is going to know that. So I think that carries over to this audience. So he had a passion for it that almost nearly just about doubled the interview. And honestly, kind of got me excited about it. I was like, okay, all right, dude, I'll pick up what you're putting down. I got this.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's throw it to JC Chandor. And then on the other side of this interview, Jake and I will talk about our reaction to the footage that we were able to see ahead of Kraven the Hunter arriving in theaters on Friday the 13th. Terrific. JC Chandor, how are you, sir?
I am good. I approved my last visual effects shot last night.
Whoa! They wrestled it out of your hands.
Huh? I was about to say, sadly, similar to my homework in high school, I waited to the last minute to hand it in.
Can you tell us what your last approved thing is, or is it too?
Well, sadly, it was. It's never the, like, you know, it's never the big excited, you know. It's like, thankfully we didn't leave the monsters till last. And I don't mean literal monsters. I mean the big shot. So what was it? Yeah, it was actually, weirdly, it was like a title treatment. So it wasn't even that, you know, that exciting, but it was pretty exciting for the visual effects team, because those people come on, you know, long before you ever start shooting. So I think our visual effects producer had been working on budgets and other things just for the studio, probably like 4 years or something, maybe not four, but 3.5 years or something. So it was, and it was here in London. So it was super fun. And we're done. It's done.
Congratulations.
You should have just lied and said, yeah, you know, we're still working on the red in Spider-Man suit, but we got it figured out last night, and then just left it there.
Yeah, exactly. Turned it off.
No. Yeah. So, JC, when we first meet Kraven in this film, he's on a Siberian prison transport. And I know why, but I would like for you to tell our readers why he is number 0864 on the transport.
Yeah, well, did the clip they showed you, were you guys at, you weren't at the Comic-Con thing probably, but was the clip last night, do you guys remember when that ended? Was he running into the snow as it
yes.
ended?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, so what I will say is what you guys, there's still more to learn is what I would say. So we're still withholding some information from you as to what he's doing there and why he's there. But he is there on the simple answer to your question is, you know, he is we open the film, you know, with the fully formed adult Kraven. And he's on a hunt for a bad guy. And so he's, you know, he's getting his way into that prison. And it's, you know, it was just, I love a movie like that kind of throws you right into the character kind of fully formed in a cool way, if it's done right. And then you get to kind of rebuild the beginning of your story, you know, which is kind of structurally the way we do. So yeah, but that sequence that we showed you guys is similar to what we showed to the Comic-Con audience. And it's just, it's Craven and it's Aaron and it's our production design team and it's our stunt team. It's everyone kind of operating at their best because it's such an amazing location. You know, that's an old, it's an actual prison we shot in that we found, this old dilapidated prison. And so it was pretty fun to get to, and it was really the first sequence actually. That was up in the north of Iceland, those beautiful Oakland shots. And then the prison is actually way somewhere hidden in England. It's an old, it's crazy, crazy history to that prison. And so we've merged it together into this like insane Russian, you know, tundra that that I think is just a really cool way of letting you know, all the things that we were trying to do with the character.
Very cool. Very cool.
JC, this is a nerdy inside baseball follow-up to Sean's question. But, you know, oftentimes with these highly anticipated comic book adaptations, superhero movies, we only get to see a little bit. I remember No Way Home, we only got to see, you know, 30 minutes. And Endgame, we only got to see maybe about 20 minutes. Are you the person who chooses what we get to see, and more importantly, where every particular scene clips off? Like, are you sitting there going, I'll show them this, but screw them, they're not seeing this?
Well, I'm a part of that. So it's a fun insider question. Basically, what happens is, because I've never been through this either, you know, it's weird talking about a movie in almost all of my past movies. I guess the Netflix one came out so quick that mm-hmm. all happened really fast because, you know, it's just dropped around the world on Netflix. But all my other films, everyone, you know, they'd had traditional festival releases, and then you do a whole press circuit, and then you do another press circuit, and then finally the movie comes out. And so this is a very new process for me because you're kind of talking about the film, but you do want to keep it as this fun event where everyone, you know, I think we just approved last night 40,000 prints are going out on this movie, which for me is crazy, you know, around the world on one day, basically. So the answer to your question is you get an email, you know, just like anyone else in their job, and it says, this is what we're thinking about. And then, you know, like I know we started with that, what we were going to do at Comic-Con. So that was taken really seriously. And, you know, we all felt really, you know, strong about that opening. So we're like, let's not be too cute about it. Like, let's show the opening of the movie. Like, we're proud of this thing. And so that was that decision. But I think on what you guys just saw, I got some suggestions. And then, you know, you click through and you watch those links. And then I know it's a think tank. And Tom Rothman, to his credit, who I love, he's been a crazy fun, you know, boss and partner on this movie with me. And I won't go into the ultimate detail, but he actually was like, hey, what about this? Like, we should show, you know, a little more, actually. And so we you know, he suggested something, and then I shortened. I know into the Comic-Con thing, the little where that opening scene stops. Yeah. That was a decision of mine where I was like, let's not actually, because it, well, I'll shut up. I'm going to shut up, but you'll see. It's not like it changes the whole movie or anything, but it's just a fun Craven-y kind of thing that comes out of that sequence. So I was like, no, let's, you know, let's hold that. So it's a cool process. You know, I got to say, this whole side of this thing is, my first couple of films were so sort of auteur theory, and it was like me. And this has, you know, been much more of a collaborative, you know, it's stressful because you have all these different things. And then in the end, I have to be the one that sort of makes the decision as to what we're doing. But I'm open. I've always been open to input, because as long as you're confident enough to you know, block out all of that and then make the decision you think is best. So
interesting.
JC, adapting any of these comic book characters comes with challenges, primarily with costume. And Craven's is so signature, and yet difficult to modernize. Yes. So what were your conversations about the costume, knowing that there's a fan base that wants to see it, but still also being like, hey, we also have to make this realistic.
Yeah. So look, I mean, of the five most challenging things along this whole movie. And you guys know this from following this world. Before you start, this is clearly the biggest one, right? And so because especially, you know, sometimes it's, I guess in some of the other films that I had looked at in this space of doing, where, you know, you're more analyzing, here's what's been done in the past, you know, here's what is in the comic books, what is our version of this movie. But I never really wanted to, if I was going to do one of these things, I wanted it to be the first time that the characters, for the most part, had been put on film, so that we were taking an original, you know, I hope what people are going to find that really speaks out about this movie is that when they see the end movie, even though it is Craven that the film can actually be put on a shelf next to any other film that I've done, and then it feels like it's of my movie and it's of my world. And in a way, even though, you know, Superman, you know, Richard Donner's Superman was the first movie I ever saw in a theater, so that is like the hallmark comic book movie for me in a way. But if I was doing the next Superman thing, it's just a different set of problems that you have. With this, it's what you said, which is like, holy shit, like what, how do you, storytelling wise and tonally, make this make sense? And right. So there's a couple things that I don't want to talk about yet until the movie actually comes out, because there are some specific costume things that I will want to, especially to your guys' audience, that I will want to like explain some of the decision making behind it. That I definitely don't want to do right now. But to your question, it's simple. It was character for me, right? And it was story. And so if I believed it, it's the one kind of special skill I have as a director, is I am able to kind of see, it's not the version of the movie that's at the end, but I can take a script and I know, you know, as we're scouting locations and you're casting people and you're talking to your DP, I'm starting to get like a very specific vision of what the movie's going to look like, right? And how it's going to be lit, and how, what the decor, you know, what the lamps are going to look like, and what the lighting is going to be, and what he's going to look like as he's jumping off walls, and all of those things start coming together for me pretty specifically in those months before shooting. And so I can sort of press play and stop on any space in the movie and be like, you know, yikes, right? Like a guy walking in and in the full Craven outfit right now is not exactly where I think the audience and I are going to be, at that moment. And so it was one of the most exciting sort of collaborative elements of this whole process was I will admit that where we actually realize that like this is how it's going to happen when he's first in that outfit, which is in the posters and all of that, we as a group had been working on it and working on it and working on it, and none of us can actually quite, I think we're all just being nice because we're not sure who it actually was literally, because there was, you know, it was one of those things, there's just so much going on. But when we had the moment actually come where we were like, you know, that's where that came from, and that's why the audience will be ready for it, and that it actually feels like the character would do that, right? Especially our version of the character is, you know, there, obviously you guys know there's all this stuff out there that was sort of first put out and is a little bit of mixed messaging and whatever, you know, about his, you know, what type of hunting and this and that. And so the idea, which I, in a way, I just want everyone at this point to just, the movie's coming out in 3 weeks, so you'll see what we've done. And I'm super proud of how we've kind of, you know, brought him into the modern world, but also in his spirit, you know, went back to the books and really, you know, stuck to that, the spirit of the canon. I think it's all in there in a way that I'm super proud of. But that costume is the ultimate crowning sort of that character. And so it was hard. There's the longest answer to a short question, but it was crazy because it you'll see, and you guys saw even from the footage you just saw, you know, there is a street level kind of realism to this, which is what I love most about the Spider-Man movies and that world, is that it looks like the backdrop, you know, of Jake's, you know, thing, right? It is you know, even though obviously this is a heightened world that you guys just saw, but these are real human beings that are trying to, you know, overcome something in their lives with enhancements, but they are human. And so I think, yeah, I hope everyone will, I know it's going to be, it'll be a talked about thing, but I feel really proud of how we did it. And it also works bizarrely for like my wife and my daughter, who like watch none of these movies, right? The movie and him putting that thing on kind of makes sense even to people that don't know, you know, the backstory. And in a weird way, that's what I'm most proud of, because it is quite an outfit. We will give it that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what I wear in the Chicago winters. That's my go-to.
I was a little bummed. At one point, it was supposed to come out but last year it was going to come out right before Halloween. And I was like, oh, that is perfect, because Craven is quite a Halloween costume. But
it gives me time to do some push-ups.
Yeah, exactly.
Before next Halloween, which I'll need to do.
I know. Yeah.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
You mentioned Spider-Man, and this is, and look, I'm not going to ask sort of the generic Spider-Man question, but anytime there is a Spider-Man adjacent character, whether it's Venom or Morbius or Madame Web or Kraven, people always ask, well, how long is it going to be until we see them together, or is there going to be a reference? I'm just sort of curious, as a storyteller, at what point do you start asking that question? Do you sort of at the
immediate? I mean, look, this is obviously the main question, and it's I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I haven't been asking the question, right? Because it's, so here is what I would say is that, you know, Aaron and I, the book we handed back and forth to each other when we were first discussing this, you know, three summers ago or whatever it was, you know, is Kraven's Last Hunt, like point blank. That was the thing that, and Richard Wenk, same thing, right? Who wrote the original story of this tale. And so what I would say to the fans and critics and, you know, and commenters in your comment pages that I do, you know, occasionally drop in and want to know what everyone's saying.
Don't do that.
You know,
all right, JC.
I can take it.
Okay.
It allows me to be the comeback kid. You know, the character that we wanted to create, you know, in success, right, of these things, if this thing works, that's where we're aiming to end this, you know, storyline with Aaron's character. When that is, how that is, you know, where he visits between here and then, you know, clearly is above my pay grade. In fact, there's no one whose pay grade actually knows that answer right now, because you guys in your world probably know all those contractual things and everything. So anyone who is pretending to tell you they know exactly who, where, and what that would end up, it doesn't exist, right? Because it literally hasn't, presumably hasn't even been begun to be negotiated. But what I can tell you about our movie and about Craven is when the final frame on this film, you know, rolls, right? What I am super, and it, you know, it plays into all of this, is when that frame rolls, I believe we've, you know, done a classic origin story, you know, comic book origin story, but not of a superhero and not even a supervillain, but just of Craven, right? Of this villainous guy who's sort of lost his way, right? Which is the best version of Craven that I love. He thinks he's actually doing good in the world, right? Don't tell Aaron this, because he still does. But, you know, he is this character who has convinced himself that he is in the right, right? And that he is this sort of egotistical, fragile egoed individual. And so when those final frames roll on our film, because where the film starts is with these innocent, not starts, but where our story starts is with this kind of great, really fun, you know, Donner-esque, you know, sequence with the younger characters and Russell Crowe. So it's the two brothers and Russell and a couple other people mixed in there. And we establish our story, and they're like these sweet, you know, amazing kids, you know, and that's, you know, villains. I mean, it's our saying, but villains aren't born, they're made, right? Yeah, and that literally comes from our movie. And so, you know, we go from that beginning. And then by the last frame, one of the challenges that I presented myself was you as the darker, you know, the knowledge, the guys that have knowledge of the darker, you know, history and future of the Craven character. What I challenged myself with was, by the time that last frame rolls, is this a character that I would believe could actually end up in that situation that he ends up with in Craven's Last Hunt, right? I didn't want it to be not connected to that. And I think it's one of the things I'm most proud of in the whole process is, for me, at least as an audience of one, when I'm sitting there and our movie ends, you're like, oh, fuck, you know, like that, this ain't going to end great, you know. And I mean, it's going to be a hell of a ride to get there, and it's going to be really fun and really crazy. But the tragedy of Craven's Last Hunt is very much alive in our story. So people got to, you know, quite frankly, all those people in the comment sections, they want to see Craven's Last Hunt. You know, there's one way to get it there, right? Which is that this film is a success. And then, you know, as you guys know enough about this business, if the film works, we'll figure out a way how to get there.
All right. I want to start digging into another character who I think fans were surprised to see as the marketing materials rolled around, and that's the Rhino. And we've seen the Rhino try to be approached before, and they went Paul Giamatti in a mechanized suit. You chose not to go that route. So what led you to the discussion to go with the full-on genetically enhanced Rhino creature?
Yeah, it's an amazing process. We had kind of, by the time we tackled that, I was starting to learn about how you use the canon in a positive way, where you don't let it bog you down so that you're stuck, or you're like, I never want to comment on anyone else's filmmaking because it's really hard to make movies, but
yeah,
that mech suit, you're sort of trapped, literally, right? Figuratively and literally. And so it's like, as a storyteller, how do I serve our little story, right? Our little gangster movie that we're telling, you know, which is, you know, in a weird way, it's this, you've seen there's big ass sequences and Craven's doing some wild shit, but it is a real kind of street level, you know, Marvel story and so the first thing, the reason the Rhino came up in my research was he's a gangster. Like he's literally a thug. Right. And so that character just made sense in the story. He was not in the original script, the original sort of treatment script that I read. Mm-hmm. But there was a role that was perfectly, once I started to kind of dig into it, I was like, oh my God, like this guy fits into our world. You know, he's Russian, and I think there's two versions of, if I remember, of backstories, but one of them is Alexei Sestevich, if I'm pronouncing that correct. And so fit into our little, you'll see when you see the whole movie, but there's this kind of Russian gangster world. So it was all like, for me, it was like casting, almost like casting an actor, where I was like, that's our guy that should fill this space, right? But then, of course, my, you know, dear, dear friend of mine who was my kind of Marvel guru on the film, who's an old childhood friend of mine, who's a comic book writer and a teacher and really is in this world. And so he was amazing at these sort of deep dives. And, you know, once we kind of got into it, we're like, oh my God, you know, the baggage that comes with it, you know, it's such a beloved character, and there are these different versions. And so, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but what I will say is, you know, there's this amazing storyline, which is, I believe it's called Flowers for Rhino, which is basically kind of a Flowers for Algernon. Like, I forget what, do you remember what year? I think it's like late 80s.
Oh, well, this is Flowers for Rhino.
2001. So I'm getting the hard data here. So I think it came out in 2001, but it was, again, I don't want to give it away, but that
it's just us talking.
Right. The transformative kind of wanting to be something that you're not, which is when I got into the Rhino, what's tragically awesome about that character is this sort of longing to be more than what he was, right? And it's how he, in almost any version of the Rhino, it's how he gets into all that trouble, right? Is not being comfortable in his own skin.
Sure.
And in a weird way, all of our characters almost share that a little bit. It's how they all get themselves in trouble. Even Craven, you know, he wants to be more than sort of what he is. And so, you know, I got into the Flowers for Rhino storyline a bit, and it's not a direct, people shouldn't go look at that story because it's not a direct feed or anything, but there are elements, once you see the film, the sort of longing to be something that you're inherently not, was something that I was like, oh my gosh. And then Alessandro, I've worked with before, he's a serious, serious, smart dude, you know, and he, you know, tonally, what I'll say, and I think it's coolest in his character, and I think I said this at Comic-Con, but it's just true, which is one of the things I'm most proud about the movie tonally, is that, like, me as a director, the musicians who are playing their instruments and the composers who are making the music, and most importantly, the actors on the screen, like, we're taking this pretty seriously, right? You know, there's no breaking the fourth wall. There's no in the middle of some exposition thing, you know, like winking at the audience. You know, that works sometimes for me, but as a filmmaker, like when I watch a movie, I want to be in the movie, you know, like don't like give up and be like, oh, I know this is a little silly. You know, like that isn't my style. You know, it can work if done correctly, but it's also been a little bit, I think, of some of the this world is everyone's a little almost, I don't want to say embarrassed, but it's a little bit like they don't want to like admit that they're just trying to tell a great story. So there's sort of this other kind of winking and nodding going on. And I made the decision very early on that like us as performers and directors, you know, like we're like when people see the movie, like Alessandro, you know, it's like he's all in. I mean, you guys saw a little bit of it, but like he is this character that has this affliction, which you'll see as the movie progresses what it is.
Okay.
But, and here's the big but, the movie, and it's what I'm most proud of, is like the movie knows it's a fun Friday night box of popcorn, you know, Marvel film. There's, you know, I think what you guys saw, there's still some great humor, and but it's like a self-serious humor almost. It's like you know, they're all taking themselves so seriously because they believe they are these people, right? But the movie knows that it's supposed to be a fun ride and that this isn't, you know, Lawrence of Arabia or something here, right? It is a fun night out. But I think the Rhino's character, you know, Sandro's performance is amazing because it's funny and it's crazy and he's a lunatic. But he's sad, you know, he's human, and there's and even the Rhino elements, which we've teased some of, you know, so far. I don't know how to say this without, but the way we feathered them into the movie is designed to never have you not believe what you're seeing. You know, that's even if you're not from this world and you don't, meaning this Marvel world, like, you should be like, oh, I get how he, you know, got himself there.
Gotcha.
Another long answer.
No, we'll take him. We'll take him. JC, I think they're pulling us out of here, man. Seriously, congratulations on this.
One more. I know there's one more. Any last
one? Is it okay? We got time for one more?
I'm in charge. I'm here. Come on.
One beautiful.
A quick one.
Okay, quick one. I know for years that this is a character
that was to me, not you, the quick one.
Okay. I know they've been trying to make Kraven work on the big screen for a long time. I'd always heard rumors that was going to be Raimi's villain for Spider-Man 4, and before they came up with a No Way Home scenario, I'd heard that Kraven was going to be Holland's third villain for his third Spider-Man movie. I'm curious, were you at all privied to plans that other directors had with for the character, or were you at all interested in what Sam Raimi or anyone else was going to be doing with the character?
Ryan Coogler is a friend of mine. I mean, I've known Ryan for years, and I know he had some interest at one point. So that I did do a little bit of research just because I know him, and I wanted to. This was before I ever took the job, quite frankly. So I knew it was so long ago. It was probably before the second one had ever came out. So I think I was actually reaching out to him, if I remember, to make sure that it wasn't something that he was actively, you know, doing. So I do remember doing that with Ryan. But that was more a personal filmmaker to filmmaker thing than it was like some world building. But no, there was, you know, and I think it's a great way to wrap up. There was a story that Richard had come up with, that is the backbone of what you're about to see. It's very different. We had to do a lot of work and a lot of changes, and there was a lot of other things added in, and it's a whole different beast. But the backbone of this story, you know, and the plot and what happens and the sort of family saga of it, that was there when I got it. And it's one of the things that attracted me to it, right? I was like, I can do something with this. This is a story that actually makes this version of Kraven. You know, look, my job and my goal with all of this is that a year from now, no one will, you guys will still, because you're so deep embedded in this, but like, Those versions never happened, man. Mm-hmm. And this one did. And so my my job as a filmmaker is to literally, when you Google Kraven the Hunter, right? That Aaron and this version is next to that classic image that we obviously are using of him sitting in the chair, right? And it's like that is Kraven the Hunter. And so where he goes from here and whether he goes and visits other worlds and what he does, as I said, who the heck knows? But as a filmmaker and a storyteller, you can only, you know, these things become, for better or worse, like reality in your life while you're working on them. And so I didn't really want to know all of that. Like I said, the Ryan thing was sort of a personal thing, but story-wise, I had my version when I got that document from Richard. It was like, this is good. You know, this can be good. It's not good yet, but it can be. And so, you know, hopefully that's what people feel like when they see the film. It's like anyone says that name to you, Kraven the Hunter, after this, hopefully you'll think of that last image of our movie, and then we'll get to build on it from there.
JC, man, your passion is really infectious.
Well, I just finished last night. It's so fun to actually get to talk about this now.
Yeah, man. Honestly, like, this is refreshing.
Please come back on the show. We'd love to do a spoiler episode with you.
I'm game. I literally, I'm not starting working again, shooting anything till this spring. So, you know, look, one of the reasons we released the movie where we did is so hopefully the movie, because, you know, look, we know we're up against it a little here with these, you know, the Sony, everyone we know here. So we want, if people love this movie, we really wanted it to have a chance to play for a little bit, you know, through the holidays. So, you know, there probably will be, as long as we hope that the film is received the way we want it to be, we'd love to come out and you know, answer some of the questions once people have had a chance to see it.
Well, you're welcome here anytime, man. It's a pleasure talking with you. We want to thank our good friends at Sony Pictures and, of course, JC Chandor for joining the show. I am really excited for Kraven. I liked the footage that we got a chance to see. In fact, they released the opening scene online, so you can go watch that on YouTube right now after you're done listening to our full episode. It is a prison break with Aaron Taylor Johnson's Kraven the Hunter going behind the enemy lines at a Russian sort of gulag prison where he confronts a guy who's an arms dealer. Makes me think that Kraven might be a bit of a, what am I trying to think of? Not assassin, but like a contract killer almost. Mm-hmm. There's a word for it. What am I trying to think of? There's a word for that.
Hitman,
maybe, almost. Yeah. You know what mercenary? We didn't get to see in the footage? Mercenary. Thank you very much.
Well done. You walking, talking thesaurus.
We didn't get a chance to see him in the full outfit. I know that that's part of the trailer. And so he'll get it at some point. I don't know how much we're going to get of that. I liked the physicality of Kraven. Aaron Taylor Johnson's sort of bouncing around like a video game character, but it looks really realistic. There's a good chase sequence where he's on the edge of on the side of a truck during a really good fight sequence. So I'm in. My problem with the Sony movies, with the Sony Spider-Man universe, is, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 11 times. What the hell are we doing here? But I'm excited for what JC is putting down, like Jake said.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Movie comes out on Friday.
It does.
How are we feeling about that?
I don't think it's going to do well.
What are the chances that it loses to the third weekend of Moana 2?
Very possible.
You know what would make this movie crush, if not week one, week two? Spider-Man? Is if somehow they've kept it secret that Spider-Man's in this one finally.
Yeah, I know. No, that's not happening.
It's impossible.
Can I tell a story, and Gabe, we can determine after whether or not we should cut this story out?
Okay, let me it's always take a good start. Timestamp, okay.
probably cut that story, but that's I thought that was very interesting.
No, so do you think it's just they're tired of answering the question?
But I mean,
I think we've said it. This feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean. This is like got to be the sort of reset point. Not that there's going to be a narrative reset point, but like this is the last of the like, okay, the anti-hero without Spider-Man thing is done after this.
Well, they don't have any greenlit after this point. So even if they were to agree on one that they wanted to do, you're talking 2 years, three years before one.
What happens. Do you think is, do we have any? I mean, other than I guess Tom Holland's Marvel stuff and Spider-Verse. Is there anything else on the horizon or even rumored?
No, just those two. The ones that they had talked about was the Bad Bunny's El Muerto.
Which is done. Which is El Muerto.
Which again points me to like they're just kind of sunsetting that concept.
They announced a Donald Glover project that was going to be based on a character that I had never heard of before. And I wrote a book about Spider-Man, so that was troubling.
I would argue the average moviegoer has never heard of Kraven.
Probably not. I could see this movie opening, like, I'm going to put a number out there.
Okay.
10 to 12.
That's not good.
No, it's not. But Sony's set themselves up for that. They've delivered not great movies, right? But if the movie is good, the way that JC Chandor is making it out to be, and word of mouth gets out, maybe it sustains for a little bit.
I don't do this is a tough time to sustain, man.
Can I give you, I don't know if there's anything near, we're recording on Monday, so usually there's
any
not
tracking.
I usually it's like Wednesday, maybe tomorrow we'd get some. Let me double check, but I have a long range forecast from Box Office Pro, which I go to often, from November 22nd which mm-hmm. has their, again, their long range that far out, 20 to 25.
For opening?
Yeah.
If domestic. They open to that, Sony better be very happy.
Yeah. I gotta miss, I just, and I'm not, I'm really not trying to kick this movie while it's down. I don't even see any like film Twitter talking about it. I mean, we're talking about a movie that is 4 days out.
Sure.
And I just don't see it as any point of the conversation.
Well, and you asked about Moana. Like, Moana's at 52, right? As of last week. It did 52 million.
Yeah, even if it drops 60%, you're looking at a 20 20s. Million. Yeah. And I don't see Craven breaking 20.
I mean, again, if Sony can break 20 on this one, I think they'd be really
Dude, Craven might not even beat Wicked in its fourth week.
Dude, I haven't seen a commercial for this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, no one's talking about it. Like, right. we're you know, even Madam Web was talked about. Like, right. It was, you know, it was butt of a joke, but it was still a joke that people were saying.
Where are the, you know, not to do this, but like, where are the commercial tie-ins? Where is Aaron Taylor Johnson drinking a Mountain Dew in a costume? Where's, you know, the Happy Meal tie-in, you know, for the toy? This, I guess, is it? No, it's an R-rated movie. That's a thing.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that.
So all I can update on that is as of December 7th, same Box Office Pro, they haven't changed their projection. But again, I think that we don't really get new information until later this week. But
okay. Well, I'll be really curious to see how this plays, and we'll end up talking about it. And again, I am excited, but I have fallen down this hole multiple times with the Spider-Man spinoffs. But I like the idea of J.C. Chandor. I think that he's a good hire, and I hope that he's able to.
But okay, can I really quick tell you one of my pet peeves that I got, that I feel like we got in this interview, and then I also got a lot from Aaron Taylor Johnson in my TV interview with him.
Yeah.
One of my pet peeves is sort of this thing that I feel like actors do for movies like this, where they say, well, you know, we really want to do this plot line, but the only way we can do that plot line is if people show up for this movie. And it's like, why didn't you do that plot line? Right. Like, why didn't you just give us like the thing that apparently if everyone wanted to make adapt that comic book, why didn't you just adapt that comic book?
Was there ever a time that worked? Like, well, I don't even know what that comes from. Like,
I don't know. Maybe it's obnoxious. You could argue
that, maybe you could argue that like Marvel, when it was firing on all cylinders, was putting out a good movie and being like, this good movie is going to lead to a great one.
Right.
Is a little different than like, well, I don't know about this one, but the next one could be good.
But telling an audience these days that, you know, that's a little bit tougher to get out to the movie theater, that they've got to pay their dues to get the story they really want. That's not going to work out well for you.
No. And the problem with the Sony movies currently is it feels like, let's say Warner Brothers put out Fully Ado, right?
Yeah.
And it was received the way it received. And then they were like, well, listen here, Brendan Gleeson's character is going to get an origin story. So get excited. Find out what Officer So-and-so is going to do. So, I mean, let's move on to. So we didn't necessarily want to do a Golden Globes reaction. It's been a full week. You guys have processed what's going on with the Globes. But in the wake of the Globes and then two of the major groups, the New York Film Critics Circle and the LA Film Critics Association, putting out their lists, we thought it would be a good idea to kind of do a what's trending up, what's trending down in the overall race. And while we fully admit, and I think Jake and Gabe, you both would agree with this, that those groups don't have a sway in the fact that they're not made up of Academy members. We have said multiple times over the years that as long as you're staying in the conversation, as long as you're a film that is getting the quote unquote buzz, but attention, if you're bringing more attention to your
film, that's the word, I think,
then it helps, right? Like, so a Globe nomination could seem relatively silly because there's an actor category in a musical comedy where I think you could look at most of those names.
Dude, and say, like, Hugh Grant nominated for best actor in a comedy or musical for Heretic.
That's
ridiculous. Did you see it? Did you watch it?
I have not seen it yet. No, but it's not a comedy.
It's not exactly a laugh a minute. this religious nut who murders people. Sure.
Does he sing anything?
Is that worse than the Martian? Is it worse than the Martian?
Yeah, honestly, at least I found the Martian. Like, the Martian had a lot of humor in it.
He was like a lighthearted, like, quippy kind of character. Yeah.
This one is not. This one is.
I would like to bring up this category, and I'm scanning through until I can find it. But what is it called?
Oh, the box office?
Yes.
Though, okay, I saw someone tweeting today that's in the Hollywood Forum, because a lot of people were like, how did Dune 2 not get in? How did Long Legs not get in? And apparently this person with HFPA tweeted out saying the studio has to submit their movie for that category. And a lot of the major movies that we would have put in there. So like the studios aren't even taking that category seriously.
It's kind of ridiculous.
It's stupid.
That category is really silly.
It's really stupid.
Is the Academy still doing that audience award?
I know. I think after it basically just it went to Zack Snyder's Justice League, and I think they're like, okay, we're good. Yeah, we're good.
All right, so the first thing that you want to talk about as trending up is The Substance.
You think
The Substance has better footing in the race currently because of its recognition
for the Substance is going to bed better than it woke up, man. It got Best Picture, it got Best Director, which is huge.
Yes.
Best Actress, Demi Moore, but also Best Supporting Actress for Margot Qualley, which is almost more impressive because for the supporting categories, they combine comedy and drama. So you don't have the benefit of going into your own genre.
Sure.
And then score, I can't remember if it got screenplay, but The Substance, I feel like, was very much the movie this year that everyone was kind of waiting to see, like, I watched it with two friends last night who hated it. Oh my God, did they hate it?
Did they finish it? Did they get all the way through?
It was very much a like, well, now we have to see what happens. But, okay. Everyone was kind of waiting to see is the awards body going to like embrace something like this?
Sure.
And not only did they embrace it, it was like one of their big, like, you know, it getting director, I felt like, was huge.
That's big.
It got screenplay at the Globes as well. Thank you, Gabe. I feel like Substance very much is in a fantastic place right now.
All right. Realistically, of those nominations, what do you think carries over? I can see Demi carrying over. I'm not sure if the others do.
I think picture.
Not director.
I would say probably not director.
As much as I would like her to, I just feel like the category is too stacked.
Yeah, it's too stacked.
Unfortunately.
But I can see Demi in picture. Demi in picture. Yeah, I think it gets one of the 10 best picture slots, which, I mean, think about the movie that we're talking about. Think about the last 10 minutes of that movie and then tell yourself, best picture, baby. Honestly, the nomination is the win.
I'm okay with getting it. Hell yeah.
I love it. I'd love to see Margot Qualley get in. I've always kind of felt bad that Demi was getting attention and Margot Qualley was not, because to me, you got to have both.
I said to Michelle the other day that when we were talking about this movie again, after she got a chance to see it, that I thought Margot Qualley gave the better performance.
Oh, interesting.
And she didn't necessarily agree and kind of want to understand why I even said that. And I didn't really know. And my explanation was a little bit that I think Demi gets assisted by the makeup. Alana, I think it does some of the heavy lifting for her. Because it's the shock value when you catch back up with her and she's gotten older.
Yeah, but she has so many incredible scenes before, the exchange starts taking place.
She does. The only time when The Substance started to, and listen, I've watched it twice and I think that it's airtight.
Yeah.
The one scene that almost teeters a little bit too, and here we're picking nits because, you know, we're talking about a Best Picture nomination, is when she's cooking and she's watching Margaret Qualley on the talk show. Yeah. And she's kind of hamming it up a little bit. Yeah. It's the only time when I was like, I feel like you lost the tone just a little bit.
I was there, man. I honestly love that scene. It's funny that actually scene actually stood out to me last night. And I actually very much like that scene. So that's
really,
that's interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, but I think they're both fantastic. And I would love to see them both get recognized, but you're right. Yeah. It's an uphill battle for that. That movie, because it's so weird. Dune. So you're saying Dune is out. Dune's not out.
Okay. I'm not saying it's out, but I'm saying it not getting a nomination for Denny.
Director's crazy.
That's crazy. How you watch that movie and don't think, keep in mind, he didn't get the Oscar nomination for Part One.
Right.
I just feel like, you know, people have a little bit of, and I feel like awards amnesia hasn't really been as much of a thing lately. But I feel like it's one of those. And Gabe brought up a good point in the show before the show. I feel like there was a moment where before Dune Messiah was announced, everyone kind of thought, all right, well, we're going to wait to award Denis and all the Dune, throw all of our Dune love for part two.
Right.
But now that we know that Dune part two is part two of three, because I think he's working on the script for Dune Messiah right now. He told me I got to talk to him the other day, and he told me that he's working on the script, and he very much knows how the whole thing's going to wrap up. He told me that he knows what the last shot of the trilogy is going to be. And so I think now, to your point, like, one, I also just think people have kind of forgotten about it. It feels like a lifetime. I mean, also keep in mind, for most people, it came out in, everybody came out in March. You and I, Sean, yeah, we saw it in January.
Yeah, true.
We saw it on like the last day of January, because the junket was like February 1st or something like that.
Yeah.
So
here's the thing about Dune 2. It is so good from the minute you put it on. Right. Yeah. Like, it starts big. It stays great. Mm. So if Warner Brothers can remind enough people to just put the screener on, then they'll go, oh, yeah, that's right, this is really good. You know, like this is quality filmmaking.
Is there a better blockbuster this year?
No, no, there's not. I put it on HBO Max the other day, and just, okay, I'll tell you, and I agree with this answer 100%. I asked Denis Villeneuve, what is the moment that he wishes a younger version of himself could have watched and been like, oh my God, I can't believe I made that.
Okay.
Of his entire filmography. And he said it's the opening scene of Dune Part Two, where the Harkonnen start lifting off.
It's like, right, that's the moment.
That's
the moment where you're watching something and you're like, oh, this is really special.
I told him, I was sitting next to you at the junket and at the screening, and I just went, fuck.
I remember that. Because we were singing in that like pristine IMAX setup. And that's like unlike anything you've ever seen before.
And the idea that someone could look at that and go, best director, meh.
So of the six Globe nominations.
Could that be also a situation where they have to submit themselves for that? Like, is it possible that one, Warner Brothers doesn't care about the Globes, or two,
I mean, that's all Warner Brothers has,
or two, like, Denis is like, I'm making this, I don't want to do a campaign. Like, I'm in the middle of Messiah, I don't want to do a campaign. That's complete.
I think they've done a few Q&As, but you also have to keep in mind that his two lead stars each have their own respective movies. Zendaya has Challengers, and Timothy has A Complete Unknown.
This is true. Man, Challengers was this year too.
Yeah, Challengers and Challengers did well.
Zendaya got nominated.
Yeah. Timothy got nominated.
Yeah. So that creates a little bit of a problem. Yeah. I just want to go over the six director nominees for the Globes. Again, not an apples to oranges comparison, but there are four names here that stand out to me that I think are in at the Oscars. And that would be Brady Corbett for The Brutalist. Yes. I think he's in. Jacques Audiard, I believe, is going to get in for Emilia Perez. Edward Berger is going to get in for Conclave.
Yeah, I would say.
I think Sean Baker's in for Anora.
Yeah.
That's four. You're talking four and one more slot open for potentially John Chu, Denis Villeneuve, Coralie Farghout for The Substance if she gets in.
Yeah.
Mangold if A Complete Unknown goes over big.
I'm not saying he's not deserving. I'm saying he's not in. I'm saying it's not even close. Mangold's not in the conversation, dude.
You're crazy, dude. No, that movie's directed beautifully.
It has nothing to do with whether or not he's deserving. I'm telling you, he's not in.
I think if that movie goes over as well as, dude, everyone who has seen it can't stop talking about it.
Tell me how he wasn't in for Ford versus Ferrari. He wasn't in for Walk the Line.
Those are not A Complete Unknown. They're not. I would put my money on John M. Chu before I put it on Mangold, but I'm not counting Mangold out.
I don't think Chu's in either, dude. I'm going to be honest with you.
I'm not saying that he is going to be in, but
yeah, I don't know. I'd put Chu over, over Mangold? Mangold, yeah. I'm just saying.
All right, well, let's transition to that last topic then. Is Wicked the contender that we think it is? It didn't get director, it didn't get screenplay.
But we didn't think it was okay. If it was ever going to get director, it should have, I think it needed to get it here. Six nominees, and a voting branch that famously loves musicals.
Yeah. But the director category doesn't get broken up into musical.
No, it does not. It is not
the way that the other categories
I think the old Golden Globes
nominated
him.
Okay. I would give the Globes, while I don't think the Hollywood Press Association is a legitimate body, I mean, they're legitimate.
You have to give them credit. They have added members, international members from around the world.
For sure.
That are from my understanding, genuine professional film journalists and critics. Okay. Which is why I think you get a lot more of an international flavor, I think.
Without a doubt. And I think that their nominations reflect the fact that they have more of an interest in world cinema than in general.
Yes.
Where I'm going with this is saying I think the Academy is still relatively stodgy, and a movie like Wicked is more in the avenue of what the Oscars would appreciate. More so than what the Globes would.
In the director category?
Whereas the Globes are a little bit more, right now, thinking outside the box and willing to honor more again, global cinema. The Academy's still the Academy, dude. I don't care how young they get. There's still a lot of old members.
You're talking about a directing branch that didn't nominate Greta Gerwig. You're talking about a directing branch that didn't nominate Denis Villeneuve. Like, yeah. I don't think they go for the directors of the big blockbusters. I just don't think they do.
But does Wicked get any pull of it? It's a reference to a golden age Hollywood classic.
I mean, I feel like
I don't think audiences.
I think Greta doesn't get, and also you have to keep in mind, I'm not saying that like the Wicked charm and the buzz and everything is going to be dead by the time that they're voting, but like they're not voting for a while.
Wait a second, but I want to point out the fact that I think Wicked is really well directed.
Like, dude, again, this has nothing to do with whether or not they should be in it or not. Matter of whether or not they will.
But I think a lot of directors will watch that movie and understand how difficult it is to
how practical it is
coordinate those moving parts.
It didn't work for Dune Part One,
but that doesn't mean anything. There's so many other factors that go into that of the directors thinking we'll get Denis on the next one or something like that. Sure, but what if they just recognize that this is a really well made? Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, that's also true.
Literally next year.
Okay. That was the thing I was curious about was how they're. I think we might have talked about that last week.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be as much of a part one, part two conversation surrounding Wicked the way there was Dune.
But that's got to be part of their, we're not going to do anything at the Super Bowl. Like, it has to be a part of that. I guess was voting after or before the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's before the Super Bowl. But keep in mind that, like, with Dune, the whole part one, part two was so much of the narrative, if only because we didn't know if we were getting part two.
Yeah.
So it was so much part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. That we were all kind of, you know, on pins and needles, you know, making sure that it did well enough to justify a part two. And with, you know, with this, it's just guaranteed. We know it's coming.
How many nominations, Gabe, can you look up? How many nominations does Denis have?
Denis, give me just one moment.
Let's see. He would have gotten. Has he ever gotten a? I don't think he's ever gotten a director nomination.
He's been nominated for 3 Oscars.
OK, well, wait, let me guess. Dune Part One Picture. Dune Part One adapted screenplay. Is that right?
Yes.
And then what the hell would the third one be? I don't feel like he didn't get nominated for Blade Runner.
It's absolutely deserving.
Oh, what is
it?
I'm
gonna look up the category and I'm gonna say he should have won.
Oh, tell me.
Arrival.
Is it
Arrival screenplay?
Is it Sicario screenplay?
No, Arrival.
He said Arrival.
Oh, Arrival screenplay.
Arrival director?
Direct.
Oh, director!
He didn't write Arrival.
Oh, he did get a director nomination for Arrival. I didn't realize he's gotten a director nomination. Because
I was about
to flirt
that, is it possible the director's branch doesn't like Denis? Is he the Hitchcock of the current branch?
I also, I think for a long time he was kind of like new. Like he was like a young... Like he's made all his movies have been great. And I feel like he had that sort of like he's going to continue to make great movies.
Yeah.
We're watching. And I think Dune might be, you know, might be the exclamation point at the end of that. But that was the energy I remember of like, oh, he's going to continue to make movies. We can give other people.
OK, I would very much argue along these lines that I think Wicked is still very much the contender that it, I think there's more love and passion for Wicked than Dune 2 even. I don't think people come out of Dune 2 like absolutely loving Dune 2. Ugh. I think they, not on a Wicked level.
You know who he was up against?
Dune the musical.
For Arrival.
Who?
Barry Jenkins for Moonlight.
Oh, Damien Chazelle.
Kenneth Lonergan for Manchester by the Sea, which is really well directed. Hacksaw Ridge for Mel Gibson, which was a whole storyline of Mel Gibson, yeah. I think, with that. Denis for Arrival, and then yeah, Damien Chazelle winning for.
Oh, do you take it away from Damien Chazelle, Sean?
No,
I don't either.
I give it to them both. That's what I do.
Wow. You pull the La La Land Moonlight thing, but you tell Damien, you can keep yours.
I just give them both on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a category.
They're like, told you just open the envelope and read the name. And I was like, no, I'm giving it to them.
I refuse.
Both. Yeah. Wow. That's an incredible one. All right. Complete Unknown seems to be in the race, right? It's getting mentioned.
Yeah, it needed to get picture. I had Have always assumed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I had always assumed it was going to get actor and supporting actor. I think the narrative, there's a little bit of a narrative of either Monica Barbaro or Elle Fanning getting in. I think that narrative kind of got squashed a little bit today.
Okay.
But I think Norton's very much at least down for a nomination, which he hasn't been nominated in a while. Norton hasn't.
Right.
Kevin was saying that Chalamet is just like. Otherworldly for this kind of performance.
It's pretty incredible. Like, it's a pretty awe-inspiring performance.
Man, I cannot stop thinking about that movie.
I've put it on. Yeah,
movie that a couple has times. Stuck to my ribs more than any other film I've seen this season. It is incredible. It blows me away how good it is. And I'm not a Dylan guy at all. And I don't even think you have to be. I think it's about so many more things that are bigger than just the artist of Bob Dylan. You can go in and get a lot about Bob Dylan, but the point of the movie is almost that this guy's an enigma, and we're not gonna bother to try to figure out who he is. We're just gonna accept that he was. But Gabe, when you see it, like, there's a thread that Chalamet has to sort of, there's a needle that he has to thread. There's a line that he has to walk.
Thread the needle. Yeah, that's right.
He has to walk the line. Is that what you just said?
He has to walk the line.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird when he held up that glass of dirty water. Yeah. It was, where Dylan is gifted, like talented, and also uber famous. Mm-hmm. Like, and he understands that when he walks into a room, he's gonna be the focus of attention.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Chalamet has gotten to that point, right? So it's like the artist playing the artist. Like, it's like he's
cool.
He is gravitated to the point, like, where he's at the right time to play.
That's
that
an interesting.
Art.
That's cool. Interesting.
And I remember, I think it was Sean, you said it for Dune 2, was like Chalamet has been building to being like a true movie star in Dune 2. To you, felt like, oh, now he's carrying a blockbuster movie star versus very talented young actor.
I would need to know, like, try to figure out the timing wise what big blockbusters were being pitched around this time. But I asked Chalamet a question, because there's this whole sort of narrative in the movie about everyone around Bob Dylan thinking they knew what was best for him, and everyone telling him, you got to do this, you got to do that. And he very much just decides to do whatever the hell he wants to do. Mm-hmm. So I asked Chalamet, what is the piece of advice or the note that you've gotten in your career that you're most happy you did not take?
Mm.
And he said that following the success of Call Me By Your Name, he was very much in a position of like, okay, this is that moment where my choice is going to determine which direction I'm going to go, because he had all kind of things thrown at him. And he said that there were two massive blockbusters thrown at him. He said, I'm not going to tell you what they are. He said, but I had two really big blockbusters that everyone was telling me, you got to take these, you got to take these, you got to take these. And he goes, I went, no, this just doesn't feel right for me. And I'd love to know. I mean, I'm sure we could probably, figure it out what it was, because if Call Me By Your Name was 2017, then in theory they would have been blockbusters. Maybe that would have come out around 2019 or so.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'd love to figure out.
He was just holding out for Wonka.
Holding out for Wonka. Hey, I liked him in Wonka, man.
No, he's great in Wonka.
Yeah.
I hate that movie. I hate the movie. I don't dislike him. I think the movie is kind of a mess. I think it's terrible.
His can I read you his 2017?
Sure.
In 2017, he was in Call Me By Your Name, Hot Summer Nights, which sounds familiar, but I don't know that I'm familiar with that. Lady Bird and Hostels with. Yeah, Christian Bale.
Because by that point, he had already done Interstellar.
Yes.
And it's crazy how much he is very much, I feel like, growing into like a Casey Affleck look, which is funny because he plays a young Casey Affleck in Interstellar.
That's true. That's true. That's funny. But man, that's a lot. 2017.
I think I got it.
Tell me.
Hobbs and Shaw. 2019 Hobbs and Shaw.
But he was going to play both.
Yeah. And you know what? If he had, he might have got his Oscar.
Yeah. He might have. Very true. All right. And the last title that we want to bring up, just because it's going wider, is September 5. September 5 yes. got some love from the Globes. I'm a firm believer that the more people start to see this movie and even know what it is, I mean, I can't stand the title. It's so generic and it's so difficult.
And none of the imagery. Traction. Like the pictures and stuff, like the posters, none of the imagery that they've, I don't know what the image is you released. I really don't. I presented a problem without a solution, but.
Well, it doesn't have, with all due respect, a major star that sure. you can sell it on.
Sure.
It's not a sexy story at all.
No.
It's just one of the most incredible, important stories that you're going to hear in our lifetime. And it's got a terrible title. So the marketing is an uphill battle. Yeah. I understand for it. But I would love for September 5 to get some traction because it's truly remarkable and please needs to be seen by as many people as possible.
I mean, and you experience this as well, Sean, but I'm always fascinated after we kind of see everything ourselves. And then by nature of us having these screeners, obviously, you know, I have friends come over and they want to watch stuff. I had my family here over the Thanksgiving holiday. Yeah. And I'm always very curious as to what it is that they want to see. Now, I will make suggestions. Hey, guys, this is really good. No, I know you guys, you're not going to like this. Hey, but I'll throw out more stuff than we have time to watch. My family, I've been trying to get someone to watch September 5 and everyone goes, I mean, everyone collectively says, I'm sure it's good, but like, that just doesn't sound like something I want to watch.
Yeah, I know. Followed
immediately by, is that Beetlejuice?
Beetlejuice? This time they did two of them?
Yeah, oh no, the way I became the most popular guy in the room whenever we have five plays of Wicked, you know, on our screener app, which Sean and I are lucky enough to have by nature of being a part of CCA. Every single movie that we have on our screener app allows for 20 plays.
20 plays.
Except for Wicked, which it allows for five. Which, like, I know, woe is me, right? Oh, you can only watch Wicked five times at home. but I will say, but you do have to be a little, like, so many different people want to watch it. You have to be very slight. And I know that, you know, like, okay, well, you know, I'll probably bring my Apple box home for the holidays so I can watch movies with my family. And I know they're going to want to watch it. So I have to, like, account for, okay, what they get one. You know, you really have to kind of, oh my God, I want to punch myself in the face.
I'm going to give you a peek behind the curtain on Jake Hamilton. When we were prepping to interview John Chu, it wasn't on the screener app yet. And Jake said, I want to ask John Chu when that's going to get added to the screener app. Because I want to watch it for free.
Just out of
just like the first that's time all. I
just
watched
like the
it.
First time I watched it.
Just like the first time I watched it for free. That was great.
Oh, God. Anyone that wants to punch me in the face, I get it.
Sweet. I'll line up.
yeah, start. You're getting in line, baby.
Guess what?
Tell me.
I remember the joke.
Oh,
no, I knew you would. You want to send us out? All right, let's start the show over. We're going to start the show over.
Let's give us our closing out. And then instead of yelling, because we don't have night bitch anymore.
I don't have night bitch anymore. Yeah, okay, sounds good. All right, sounds good. All right, so here's your call to action. Head to the comments down below and let us know if you're going to go see Kraven the Hunter this weekend.
Or if there's something else you're catching up on. There's a lot in theaters.
There's a lot in theaters currently, and so there's a good time to get to the theaters and not just go see Wicked for the fifth time with your fifth play or Moana 2. You can head to see Kraven or something else. So let us know what you're going to go see in the theaters. Follow us on social media. Of course, we are at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach. The show is at Real Blood. We have an Instagram account now.
Yeah, we do.
Officially, yeah.
Please give us a follow.
We're also on Blue Sky. That.
And we're on Blue Sky. There you go. And in the meantime, here's your joke. Are you ready? All right. Let me.
This better be good.
Oh my God. I hope it's terrible. I hope the buildup is just awful.
All right. We'll leave you on this one, folks.
Hello, blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 332 of Real Blend, a podcast that can't wait for Clint Eastwood to announce the release dates of Juror number 3, number 4, and number 5.
Please come back next week and listen.
Come on. It's like an Avatar joke.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.